Well, it's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio for another edition of Inside the City, Palmer's elder city manager. I'm thinking of terms that I can use now that you've been here month after month, soon year after year.
Yep.
So welcome, Nate Wallace.
Thank you. It's good to be here again.
And you were able to make it by getting through the snow that coats our fine city. Was there joy in those people who have been sharpening the blades of snowplows and wanting to move the equipment?
Oh, I'm not sure there's a lot of joy in snow plowing, but we're ready.
You're ready.
Again, we've been prepared since about the middle of October, maybe the 1st of October.
Right.
And it just hasn't, we've sanded, we've done some sanding, we just haven't done a lot of plowing. We've done a little bit, but mostly on the walkways, not the roads, just to prevent that buildup of ice on the side that will occur when we do that. So,
well, I saw someone out assiduously moving a snow shovel to practice, I think. And this wasn't a city worker. This was somebody who was making sure that businesses in downtown would not be in any way impeded in their operation by any snow whatsoever. But walking around, I have to say that, yes, this present snowfall, which, officially maybe an inch or a little more?
Depends on where you are in the city. There's a couple of spots that have gotten just a hair over an inch, but yeah, about an inch.
Right. And I've been to the big city to the south, Anchorage, and I noted that, in fact, I had a report again this morning that there's more snow there.
Quite a bit more.
Yeah. And that was my experience. And I guess that's part of a question I have. Last year, there seemed to be in a number of areas, both in cities and out boroughs and state roads, what I euphemistically called a refocused plowing schedule, and that some areas were not plowed as they had been in the past. And I know that my experience in Anchorage was that on the main roads, everything was clear, clean, a lot of traffic, et cetera. And I just took a turn off just a side street to go someplace, and this doesn't look like a place that has been addressed with either plow or sand or anything. And what's going to happen here in Palmer? Do you pretty much plowing, sanding schedule as usual, or any changes coming up?
Well, we sand as needed, so it's not based as much on the depth of snow as plowing is. So it's our police department as the eyes and ears. Of course, the citizens can call in as well with reports of icy conditions, and we'll get out and sand. But we don't sand arbitrarily just everywhere. It's where it's, like today, we wouldn't necessarily sand everywhere, but there's intersections that ice over because of the traffic, it melts it and refreezes.
Sure.
I get reports for things like that. But when it comes to plowing, we do have a map. It's on the web, and it shows the priorities. And not every street in the city does get plowed. But there are three categories, red, yellow, blue, I believe. The red is a priority, which is public safety and school buses is really what that's focused on, main access routes. The next are the connector roads. And then finally, the rest of the city is really blue. So we try to get every road if we can, but that's the priorities that we go through. And some of it's also based on, if I had to guess on maybe how our sister city to the south has done their plowing, we get a dump of snow, so we start plowing, and then the snow goes away in some parts because of the wind, and it's melted down, and maybe they don't complete their list. Haven't been here for a good snow in Palmer.
Right.
That wouldn't be the way we would do it. Part of our issue is we've got to get the snow, once we plow it, we've got to get the snow out, these piles out, because we don't have a lot of snow storage on our streets.
Right.
Bike lanes in the winter, a lot of places are considered snow storage. A lot of folks don't realize that that's what that's built for, Bogard. Majority of that bike lane is for snow storage.
Oh, really?
As designed. But the way we plow and the way the borough plows, it doesn't usually end up that way. It's just temporary snow storage.
Well, and the two things happening with that, my mind, one, talking to more and more people, who have become fascinated with being outside on a fat tire bike.
And that's society has changed. The nature of our activities have changed.
Oh, yeah.
So bike lanes, when engineers designed bike lanes for the winter, it was because people didn't ride bikes in the winter. So you can get away with it. But now times have changed, and fat tire bikes and the big wide tires and the nature of our weather, too, has changed it that you can get out and ride a bike in the winter. So now we have to look at how we balance snow storage with outdoor activities. And so far we've been able to keep the bike lanes open for the most part.
Well, you said something earlier, and I wanted to follow up so that listeners would have the specifics of it. If we do get the kind of snow dump, storms, repeated fall, et cetera, so that people are hard-pressed to keep up with plowing and moving, and there's some area that has been affected, say, by wind, who should they call?
Well, you can call the after hours, or 4811, which will go into dispatch. It's the non-emergency numbers, and dispatch will contact the folks that need to get out. But to Public Works, I can contact Public Works or my office, either one. Any number in the city, and they'll patch you through the right folks, whatever your question is. But if it's specifically for snow removal, it's the Public Works Department.
Okay. Now, I know, having attended an event in Anchorage not too long ago around the topic of smart cities and the ability to see things more, people are able to look at a map almost interactively. Whether you're a person who's working for the city and you have a map and you can say, okay, here's a place we're plowing, etc. It's almost live. That this is the future rolling in on us of being able to have almost an interactive situation. You have a map, but we haven't reached that point of interactive maps. Have we or not?
No. It's still the map. The map is really just a paper document that's online that shows the lines.
Okay.
Smart cities and smart technology is great, but there's an infrastructure. So all that data has to be collected from a sensor.
Right.
And a lot of cities, and I'm not sure if Anchorage is there yet, a lot of their streetlights have sensors and cameras and GPS, and some of the crosswalk signs, a lot of the crosswalk. In some of the cities that have a lot of funding for those type of things that have done in the past. So you need sensors, traffic sensors, sensors on your trucks. We don't have that many vehicles in the department.
Right.
So it wouldn't be too expensive to do 3 trucks as opposed to 100 trucks.
Sure.
But when you start talking about $10,000 a truck to outfit with GPS and the equipment to send that back and forth, it does become expensive for a city that's 5.2 square miles total.
Sure.
So we've discussed ways to make it more interactive. We probably won't have a map, but we're looking at ways to post on Facebook as we go through. Somebody in Public Works says, okay, we've plowed these streets. These are the next ones, or we're 40% through. We've discussed ways to do it. We're just waiting for a snowstorm to see how it works. Palmer probably won't have a map that you can pull to, and you have a flashing dot where the truck is and a green line where the roads have been plowed, at least not anytime soon. We'd love to have something like that. And the same thing for garbage pickup. You can there's cities that have that as
right.
well. You can check and see, is the garbage truck close to my house? I forgot to put it out at 8, but he's
not there
in my
yet.
Neighborhood yet.
Yeah.
So there's smart technology has a lot of benefit to the citizens, but then there is a cost to that, and we're just not in a position. I don't believe. I mean, if the council wants to go that direction and fund those things in the future, we can do that. But
well, my understanding and some of the case examples that have been presented show obviously a larger entity, a city, and Anchorage could be in that category, where there is a savings, and not only in the efficient delivery of services, but a true savings in the amount of money that's cost once you have it in place, once you get up on that plateau and you have an infrastructure installed. So that's going to be interesting because you mentioned Facebook, and Facebook, I think, is something that in particular at crisis times has been incredibly useful. And I'm thinking of wildfires, for example.
Right.
And in particular, if there's a way to be able to filter so that if there's erroneous information that's being presented that can be addressed or responded to, and so on, rather than just saying, oh.
That's anything. A national discussion on information on Facebook.
Oh, that's true. And that's a very important discussion, because it would be nice to think that this is a system that would flow along and work without having any kind of heavy-handed filtering, et cetera. But sometimes the information that someone provides is inaccurate.
Right.
But the good stuff that I remember from Facebook coverage of wildfires, for example, is some of the pictures and the information about a real-time, this is the situation at this point here.
Yep.
And being able to have people report that as that information, and then have someone be able to take and say, okay, I'm putting all this together, and this is what it all means.
Yep.
And there's still that kind of thing that's necessary. Well, don't worry. We've talked about something coming on that seems to be about to push Twitter and Facebook aside, and, of course, that's Snapchat with spectacles that allow you to briefly look somewhere and have that immediately go to the internet.
So, yep.
Lots of new things happening. Let's go back to my favorite topic when you come in, and that is the state of the buildings. I notice continuing improvement. Let's start with the big one, Fred Meyer's. It looks, they've got the sign out. It's all closed in.
Yep, they're starting to work on the interior now. The date we've heard is March 3rd for grand opening.
Wow.
So it's coming quick.
That's amazing.
And I know your follow-on question is going to be, what's going on with the old one? And we still have no idea. I just haven't heard word on that at all. Nobody's contacted us for any type of change of permitting or building inside or changing the design. We haven't heard anything. Just haven't heard anything on it.
So. Okay, so that's still presumably then owned by, and it's obviously being operated. I've been in there recently. It's still functioning.
Yep.
Et cetera.
Fully stocked, ready for. So Thanksgiving was quite.
I guess that's going to be the interesting thing for listeners. You're talking about a March opening. When will the old store close its doors? Is it going to be like at midnight the door closes and the other one opens? Will both of them be open for a period of time to have people get used to the idea of crossing the highway? What's that transition going to look like?
I have no idea, but based on other places I've been, my guess is the transition when doors close will be based on when they can fully stock the new one.
Uh-huh.
And with as big as Fred Meyer's is and their presence in the state and in the valley, I think it'll probably be a very short transition.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
It may be overnight with a sign that says, don't come back here tomorrow.
With an arrow pointing in the right direction. Okay, other building that is down north South Alaska Street here, of course, is the medical clinic, the little one. And that one looks like it's pretty much finished. I don't know that it's operational yet.
It's pretty close, yes. I haven't been in it, and I don't believe it's open for business yet. Dr. Brooks, I think, still has some it's still working out of his old office.
Okay.
But anytime soon, my guess is probably the first of the year. But.
Okay. And then, of course, the building still swathed in plastic, partly next to the city hall.
Right. And most of that plastic's down now. They got the windows up and the doors on. You can see some security lights inside at night. But it's moving along real well. It's got the roof on. And you can see, if you peek in the windows, I'm not sure they like folks doing that too often.
Oh, well,
as I walked across the parking lot this morning, you could see the workers in there,
right.
not bundled up as much as they have been.
Okay.
No heat, I'm sure, but they've got it all enclosed. They're not working in the wind inside.
So, in some respects, this has been what might be called an outlier year. Obviously, something like Fred Meyer's large building that's like huge. Do we have any other? As we're looking ahead toward 2017, will this be kind of an absorption year, a take your breath year, or what kind of building?
Well, if you look at 2016 by itself, we had just over $38 million worth of construction value.
Okay,
so you subtract out the $22 million for Fred Meyer's, it comes to about $16 million, and that was our fifth highest year in the last 10 years. So it's kind of been an average. pretty close to an average year for us, with the exception of Fred Meyer. So going into next year, we don't know of any big projects, but we really didn't know any big projects other than the Fred Meyer's this year either. So to have $16 million in construction, being at the fifth highest in the last 10 years, right in the middle of the last 10 years, really the lowest in the last 10 years, about $10 million. But there's been some new house construction, remodeling, some big remodeling projects done in town that increase the property values to those for those homeowners. So this next year, it won't be a big year like this in valuation, but I think it'll continue. Just Palmer's a good place to come to for business and also for people to live. So that I think we'll see a drop off because of the Fred Meyer's and maybe because of Crowley and the clinic. Those are three big projects.
Okay.
But the level of homes and remodeling and the smaller construction, I think that we'll see that continue. I mean, unless there's a significant downturn, which could happen.
Which segues us right into you're in the end days here. Speaking of budget,
I'm hoping so.
Because we're in December and the plan is to be done by what, the 15th or so?
13th. Yep. The by code has to be done by the 15th, which is really set around the first council meeting in December.
Okay.
We finished up the last departmental budget this week.
Mm-hmm.
And we go into capital. We'll talk capital, which I think will be a good discussion probably most of the night next Tuesday. And then we finish up with our fee and fine schedule, which there's no significant changes. So I don't think those will have a lot of discussion unless there's citizens that come in and have some say on those one way or the other, up or down.
Okay.
But we've gone in neutral with both the fee and fine schedule. And the capital infrastructure program, I presented something different this year, looking to the future. We've always had a capital five-year plan, and a lot of good things on it. But when I sat down with the staff this summer, let's look at the next 10 years and how do we fund these things? Because we've really had a funding strategy for our capital plan other than for that year of the budget.
Mm-hmm.
Which of these are priorities? What do we think are going to be federally funded, state funded? What are the ones that nobody's going to pay for except the city if we want to do it? And if the city wants to do it, how are we going to fund that to get it done in the year we want it done? Do we want to set aside, how much capital money do we want to set aside for grant matching, things like that? So going into the program, we set aside, determined what we wanted it to do based on previous year's plans that were said were due, what we could actually fund. And then also presented a strategy to forward fund some things. Not fully fund road projects, but put a little bit aside this year because capital funds carry over.
Right.
Not like our operating budget. If we don't spend it, our operating budget, then it goes back into the general fund. So so we'll have that discussion this Tuesday to see if that's a policy the council wants to adopt.
And, of course, the 15th is another date important from the state's perspective because it's on that day that the governor reveals his budget plan. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the following month in January, the legislature gets to work on it. There have been some hints, however, there would be some additional reductions and additional increases in taxes and so on, the rest of that. The city is in a different position than, and we've said this before, than the school district and the assembly, and that you get to make your budget almost irrespective of what the state does.
To some degree, yep.
Yeah.
And one part of that is because we don't rely on state funds,
right,
other than the revenue sharing, which is it's $200,000 this year. Next year, we're looking at $140,000. But that pays for a police officer or it pays for a vehicle or two. So we do rely on state funding, but not for our entire budget. But what it being offset on a calendar year, we aren't waiting on pins and needles for all of our funding. So we rely on the state's budget. Any money we get from the state, we're going to get by July for. We can count on it because it's not going to change. Then the July to December piece is questionable.
Okay.
And it's the same thing with the borough. We don't receive a lot from the borough, but the one piece that we do kind of watch, we do watch the property taxes. So the assessment comes out, and then the whether the values go up or down. So we're guessing for the second half of the year on how much that'll be, if property taxes will go up or down.
I know one of the prominent discussions often involves the library. Anticipate any changes from the borough and the library this year?
They've already set their budget. They set aside $40,000 in grants to the cities, which has traditionally been the library funding. I use the word traditionally, years past, it's been several thousands of dollars in the six figures, and that has increasingly gone down to about $40,000 now. And we're still waiting to see if that will actually get moved to the cities. The borough manager proposed not doing that, not paying that expense, because the borough didn't adjust their budget. So they didn't cut out of the budget. They just asked the manager to tighten his belt.
Oh.
So the assembly didn't cut anything. So it's up to the manager to decide where not to spend. And he's informed the assembly on what his recommendations were. And there were some comments about the grants. A couple of assembly members wanted to keep the grants to the cities as ongoing. So we haven't received a check. My guess is unless the citizens get involved, that the assembly won't take action to give the manager direction any way or the other. But
okay,
it's a topic. It was a topic of discussion when we talked about our library. We have a great library. 77% of the patrons are outside the city limits, and they're paying for a library.
Sure,
but if you look, and we haven't really got an answer from the assembly or the borough manager. If you live in Equestrian Acres, where's your library? Your tax dollars are going to what library? Because they're not going to Palmer.
Yeah, it seems that discussion has been presented that way. That I followed it over many, many years. Whether you charge fees for people outside the area, you capture it in a more blanket way with a tax. Essentially, the flow of some monies from the borough taxes and so on. I believe it is safe to say that it's an unresolved issue that you can't just say no to. You can say, "Oh no, we're not gonna." I think at some point, somewhere, I would hope that the various players, so those people who live in the municipalities that have libraries, would sit down in a room with people and say, "Okay, let's look at this from the standpoint of this service is managed and paid for by the city, but does provide service to residents of the borough. How can we properly support this and have that system, which seems to be popular in people's minds, pay as you go?" You know, do you pay as you go, and how is it best to do that?
I'm not sure pay as go is popular.
Well,
not for government services.
Well, maybe that's the interesting further discussion at whatever level of government you're in. That there is a philosophical position that says we should pay for what we desire as a service.
Yeah.
If I walk into a coffee house, I pay and get the coffee. If I da 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 da. But then there's this other aspect that says, but government, which I may also think is a bad thing, needs to provide that. And you say, well, where does the money come from?
Yep.
For that? Yeah, and we go round and round on that. Good luck. I hope that that one issue can be resolved in a way that would be a model for other things too. Speaking of which, we have my other favorite topic, the dispatch center. Sir, what's happening there?
So, from the city perspective, the borough did formally request an extension. That we continue to provide services. We received the draft contract amendment. It'll go to our council on the 13th, and then it'll go to the borough assembly on the 20th. And it's a 12-month extension, which provide some security to right. our employees.
Very good.
There is a caveat to the 12-month. The previous contract had a 180-day termination notice, and this one has a 60-day.
Oh, okay.
So it allows for the transition from Palmer true, Dispatch true. To MATCOM if the borough sorts out how the...
And that'd be in 2017. Pretty much 2017 could be business as usual.
Yes. The entire year of 17 could be business as usual. Again, it gets back to the discussion we had last time. The borough is trying to figure out how to fund a proposal. So, again, the three steps. Tell us what your proposals are. We'll look at the costs, and then we'll pay for it. Well, how we pay for it, in my mind, should have been here's the parameters, and maybe put that in the RFP. Come in with a proposal that's less than we can afford, and then we'll choose the best proposal. But that wasn't the case.
Yeah, that seemed a little strange to me, too. Typically, my understanding is you have, if you're putting out a bid, you have the money in hand, or you know where it's coming from to pay for it.
That's in a bid, yes, because this was a request for proposal and not a straight-up bid, apples to apples. That's where it gets a little tricky. So,
okay, I understand.
Request for proposal versus a request for an expression of interest. We did the expression of interest at the airport. Here's some land. Folks, come tell us what you want to do with this land. Give us some proposals or expression of interest on what you would like to do out here. Then we can either follow through with any or all or none. Request for a proposal, generally you're going to select one and move forward.
Oh, yes. Yeah, one would think.
Yeah. So there's I don't want to say that there's not money there, but the money is E911 fund is several million dollars, but it has restrictions on how it can be used. And that's the part that the borough is trying to work through.
Okay, so then as I understand it quickly, there's the pay for it part, and then there is also the actual implementation of the changeover,
mm-hmm.
yeah, which could be complicated in its own.
It will be complicated, and the borough is looking to have a dedicated project manager to oversee that when the time does come.
Okay,
but that's not what the holdup is.
Gotcha.
That it'll take some time. That was the thought process of the 6-month extension originally, was to get us through a transition before the end of the year. So. Our position was you couldn't do it now. Let's go for 12 months so that we have some stability in our offices. Then you can take your time to sort out how we transition and how you pay for it. So.
Okay. Well, thank you for all of that. We have somehow managed to use up most of our time, but you have a minute if you have anything to say that we have not covered yet.
Well, again, the budget process is starting to wind down. December 6th is our next special session. And again, we're going to talk about capital. We have a special session on the 7th where we're going to interview attorneys for the city for future, basically that contract for our attorney expires this year. So we sent out a request for a proposal for that. So anybody that's interested on who our next attorney may be, that'll be on Wednesday the 7th. Also on the 7th, the airport is having a stakeholder open house for the future runway project.
Oh.
Just to collect ideas on how we might take the engineering piece. We're in the design phase now. So the folks are invited out to the Forestry Service from 4 to 6 to provide input or to look and see what the project scope looks like. It's primarily geared towards the stakeholders, but it's open to everybody. And then, of course, Colony Christmas.
Oh, yes.
Yes, City's cookie contest will be held at Colony Inn.
Right, and that's a week from Saturday on the 10th.
So yep. Drop off your cookies between 9 and 11. Wow. We'll have some judges, and then at 2 o'clock we'll award the prizes or the ribbons for those best cookies.
All right. Well, Mike Malefsky here, and I've been talking with Nate Wallace, so he's been doing a lot of talking. I've been listening to good information from another edition of Inside the City.